You're listening to The Unknown Show, and I'm your host, Bud Smith. On today's
Blog
show,
Talk
we're going to talk... You're listening to The Unknown Show, and I'm your host, Bud Smith. On today's show, we're going to talk to Robert Vaughn, a writer I really respect. He's going to talk about his poetry chapbook release that's coming out from Savannah Barber Press. He's going to read some flash fiction and hopefully explain it to explain what flash fiction is to writers out there who maybe have heard about it, but you're not really sure what it's all about. Also, Matt Garucki is going to talk to us on the show about his website, Drunk Monkeys, and his own pursuits as a new kid on the block freelance writer, something most hobbyist writers that I know, or at least have at least wondered about. But before we get into talking to all those fine Americans, I want to tell you about what happened over the weekend, as if this was like a high school English class assignment. Okay, class, did you get drunk? Did you watch Law & Order SUV Marathon? What happened? As it turns out, I hopped on a plane and flew out to California for $300, round trip ticket, $300. There was a book release party for Uno Kudo Volume 2 at an art gallery in downtown L.A., and it was a real great time. There was a reading event and whatever you want to call it at the Gottfried Halloween Art Studio, and these peeps even sent an orchestra. I couldn't believe it. The Traction Street Orchestra. I told everybody there that usually these things happen at like VFW halls, and there's a punk rock band that plays, and they looked at me like they had no idea what I was saying. I've never been at a reading with a fucking orchestra. Well, life is strange. But it was a fun event, and I wanted to thank all the readers who came and really knocked my socks off. Aaron Dietz, Megan Corey, Joe Saldivar, Trista Payne, Raven Kane, Aaron Parker. And later on in the show, I'm going to read Aaron Dietz's poem, There Are Choices. It's kind of a prose poem, absolute one of my favorite pieces of writing, definitely from the reading in L.A., but just in general. Aaron's a good friend of mine, and if you don't know, he's got a book out called Super from Emergency Press. We'll talk more about him later. Also, keep your eyes peeled. The event was filmed, and there's going to be video forthcoming, as if you don't have enough YouTube shit to leaf through. Well, right now, I'd like to bring on our first caller. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bud.
Oh, great. Well, nice to have you on the show, man. How you doing over there, okay?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, thanks
How
for
are
coming
you doing?
On. And, yeah, I'm doing pretty good, you know. Just getting over my jet lag, flying from L.A. and then going to work today. You know, I work pretty early in the morning and all that stuff. So just getting back on East Coast time.
Yes, I know how that is, because I used to live in L.A., so I know how getting over that jet lag is.
Yeah. Well, where are you calling from now?
I'm calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, heartland of America.
does your license plate say that?
No. It does not say that. But I've lived here for 10 years.
That's cool. Well,
yeah.
I'm glad you called into the show, because I really like your style, something different, and definitely something that interests me. Some of the pieces that I see you putting up on various websites and online mediums. Well, we talked a little bit about L.A. because you lived there for a bit, right?
I did live there for a bit. Yep.
How long did you live in L.A.?
It was a period of about 5 years. It was roughly 1987 or so until 1992. So that entire time, I lived close to the Hollywood Hills and kind of like East Hollywood. And I was traveling quite a bit for work through most of the time that I lived there. So I spent lots of time first sort of in San Francisco, and I still kept a place in New York, too, so I would be able to bop back there. But I also started to travel internationally quite a bit, involved in like a completely different industry and stuff. And so, you know, really, I always was writing. I always kept a pretty serious journal. You know, I always made sure I jotted shit down, impressions and things that I saw, you know, and all that. But, yeah, it was such an interesting time in L.A. when I lived there, you know. There was so much going on.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. What years, around about what years was it that you were there?
I was there from 87 until 92. So there was a really, really vivid club scene, lots of stuff going on, like after hours, you know. It was a really fun partying environment. And then the tail end of that was like right around the time that all the Rodney King stuff happened.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, because that was fairly close to my neighborhood. And
really?
It was only a few blocks down Western from the neighborhood that I was living in. And I just felt like that was such a sign for me. I was like, okay, it's time for me to go. You know, I needed to get away. I was sort of done with all my city living at that time, and I actually moved to New Hampshire, of all places, and I had this, like, real Thoreau kind of thing, like, get back to the woods. I bought a house, you know, redid the whole house. It was this major project, and lived there for a few years, and then kind of just sold the house and moved back to New York. So, yeah, it was an interesting time in my life, like, that whole L.A. thing, for sure, you know?
Yeah. So listen, before we get off that, I wanted to hear. Do you have a story about the Rodney King riots? What where were you? What was happening? What's your recollections of the days of that?
I actually wasn't in the city when that incident took place, because I believe it was the spring, if I remember correctly. I think it was like March or April when the riots went down. And I was actually away, but I came back right on the tail end of it. Like, I was there sort of like from April into May, just tying things up. I just remember being horrified by that whole thing. Like, it just seemed like it was so obviously police brutality and, you know, things were really like underscored in terms of how badly he was, beaten up. And it was you know, one of those subversive things that happens in the U.S. where, you know, it's so funny because this is coming out today about this whole document, you know, that has to do with our drone strike crap, you know. But it was one of those things that was so obviously misrepresented in the press. And the L.A. was a brutal police force at the time. I mean, it kind of came out afterwards, but there was a lot of incidents of violence that happened in the late 80s and, you know, all this corruption that was incurred within the force itself, you know, not to just target them out, because I'm sure it happens everywhere. I was keeping an eye on it because I lived in that city, so it was like my home at the time, you know?
Yeah, I was asking because my buddy Paul Cormier Roberts, he was telling me a story. He was actually, during the Rodney King riots, he was working at like a 7-Eleven or whatever you have out there. If it wasn't a 7-Eleven, like the same thing. And the rioters like got him in the store. You know, they were like barricaded. He had to barricade himself in the store and like all this shit. So I was just curious if you had any. Maybe you weren't in the 7-Eleven, but you know, that's funny as hell. So you lived in New Hampshire, but you've also lived in the city too, right? New York City, where I'm at?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I did two different stints in New York. I was there in the 80s for a bit, on the heels of finishing up university, and then I spent another year after that at NYU. And then I came back to the city in the 90s, like 92, 93, all the way kind of from 92 or 93 to 99. So a longer chunk of time in the 90s. I always consider New York my home. I grew up upstate. My best friends all still live there. You're included in that list now, bud.
All right, on.
Yeah, but, you know, I just always feel like I'm at home when I go back there. I've read a few times at both KGB and I read in another reading series that happens at 2A. Both in my old haunting grounds, you know, I lived in the East Village, so I always feel like I'm going home. Like, I go back, and all these people turn out, and it's really, really cool, so.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, it's like a big party when you come back, right?
Yeah,
so,
I feel like that.
So right now you're leading roundtables at Redbird Red Oak Writing. What is that? What does that encompass? What is that all about?
Redbird Red Oak is a private school. When I first moved here 10 years ago, you know, the first thing I always do when I move to a city is try to figure out the literary scene.
Uh-huh.
And when I first moved here, I saw a flyer that was entitled "Shut Up and Write." And I thought, God, that's a great, you know, that's such a New York expression. It's like, shut up and write, you know.
Yeah.
And it turns out that this woman, Judy Bridges, owned at the time, it was called Redbird Studio. She still has this business, too. And she offered these workshops that were called Shut Up and Write. And it was really kind of a touchstone about, like, what are the basic foundations of writing. She actually has a great book out by the same name, Shut Up and Write. And, yeah, it's a cool book. Judy Bridges is the author. And so she did that. And then from taking the course, you could enter into these different writing roundtables, which were like writer support groups, various different genres sitting around the table. You know, you might be sitting next to a person who's writing memoir or a playwright at the table, a poet. But the cool thing was that it was a great way to exchange work and get instantaneous feedback and written feedback, you know, because I was so jazzed because I was able to tune into, I listened to Brad Listy's Other People podcast, you know, the guy that does the Nervous Breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
And he did one with Lydia, who is one of my, she's one of my writing mentors, Lydia Yuknovich. I love her to death. And she was talking about that great writers group in Portland, Oregon. You know, it has Chuck Palahniuk, Cheryl Strait is in that group. I mean, it's like this amazing group of writers, you know?
Yeah.
And when I heard her describe, because he asked her, go through the detail. What do you guys do in your writing groups? And it's the same exact format that we use for ours. I was like, I thought we were so unique. But they do the same kind of thing. You know, you bring in pages. There's a person that orchestrates it time-wise, keeps track of stuff, you know. You sign in when you come in. You go in the reading order of who signs up. And you just kind of bang it out, you know. So I'm actually – I lead two roundtables now for the organization. But I also am still in a writer's group, too, where I can bring in pages. I had it this afternoon, actually. So I'm always working on crafting raw material, bringing it in, getting feedback. I think, for me, that's really vital as a writer. I'm, you know, it's one thing to, like, create the stuff in my office and, like, get into, like, you know, making a lot of work happen there. But, you know, you want to sound it off on somebody. I think it's very hard to edit your own work. And so that's a piece of it for me. I always suggest to anyone, when you move somewhere or if you live somewhere and you're connecting with other writers, start a group or get into a group that, you know, so there's also online communities, obviously, where you can workshop places like Fictionaud and, you know, different things like that. But still, I think it's vital. So anyhow.
Yeah, it is something real. It is really something different to get together with people in person, and you know, even just, you know, the process of, like, reading your shit out loud, like a lot of these things I've been to, or, you know, you go and, like, you have the pages or whatever, but if it's like you have to read your thing in front of a group, I don't know how many people don't take the time just to read their stuff out loud and really just, like, get a different look at it, because when you read it, when you're reading your drafts in your head, you know, you're really connecting all the dots. And when you start reading it out loud, stuff really reveals itself. So these groups,
lot of times when you're reading it aloud, you can already hear what, you know, isn't working or is superfluous or whatever. Like, it's just, it comes to your ear and you go, oh, wow, I need to work on that. And so, yeah, I totally dig that. So
now I want to talk. Tell me about your current projects. What are you working on right now?
Well, the current things that I've got going on are it's looking like it's going to be like more like a full length collection. I have something out right now with Trevina Barva Press. I heard you do the intro, and that's with Gloria Mindock. She's the publisher. That's an indie press out of Boston. She has Microtones, which is already, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's already put to bed, except it's going to be published. She's currently working on that there. I'm hoping to have it in my hands by AWP, the conference in March, which will really be cool. So that's already going. That's 24 poems. They're kind of prose and poems. My work always is in this murky place between prose and poetry. I kind of bridge both worlds, flash fiction oftentimes and poetry. So that's Microtones. What I'm currently working on is two different things. One is I'm calling Amnesia, and this is it's kind of like hate crimes, bigotry, bullying, you know, all of this stuff that falls under the sort of like stuff you don't really want to hear about, but you have to pay attention to.
Okay.
And it's in some cases it comes down to a personal thing, like personal people that I want to write about. As an example, Harvey Milk or Matthew Shepard. I'll have individual poems about them or being them. And then also a really topical, large volume, like world type of things. Like one of the poems that I read today at the roundtable actually had the Khmer Rouge as a backdrop. And you know that's a little bit more intense, but it's something that you know falls under that. And then the other project, which is completely different, is called Basement Tapes. And this I have to attribute to my buddy Meg Tewitt. She's one of my closest writer pals. She is starting a new column at Used Furniture Review, and it's called Exquisite Duets.
Okay, yeah.
And she asked me to partner with her for the first one that she launched in January. And basically the idea is that she'll give you a line, that it'll be two writers for January. She'll give these people a first line, and then whether they're poets or fiction writers, they'll create whatever piece they want from the line. So ours was, I moved into a basement apartment. And just from that line, I realized I've used basements so much in different writing of mine. So
okay,
I sort of thought, well, you know, I generated all these pieces that had to do with, like, basements in the past month and a half since I wrote that. And I thought I might read that piece if we have time tonight for me to read a couple of pieces.
Yeah, well, that's just quite a coincidence, because I was going to ask you if you wouldn't mind reading that. I was checking that out on Used Furniture Review a little earlier today. And if you have it available, would you please read it?
Yeah, I would love to read it. So the piece is called The Lost and Erasable Parts of Us. I moved into a basement apartment. The first thing to go was my sense of smell. Whether by cognitive choice or simply chance, everything smelled like Cheetos. I tried to follow where you ended up, a night in the park, then through the Holland Tunnel. Then I'd heard you moved away. That same day, I lost my pancreas. And my islets of Langerhans, missing. So I walked past our apartment before my feet disappeared, and the building was no longer there. It had been shipped to Guatemala, the strikers told me. Archaeological research. That night, while searching for more information on the internet, my fingers began dissolving eventual stumps. I threw out all the nail polish. What part remains to be seen, my landlord asked, when I questioned her about the basement. I wanted to go back to the beginning, back to when you and I met, those late-night pep rallies, bonfires, shooting stars, acne, before gangrene and decay, prior to those times you wouldn't talk for days, ignored me, my identity tied up in a bottle. I craved my smell back, my decency, shameless will. I grew gills, slithered up the stairs, fettered away towards some desert city in undulating waves.
I really love that piece and how it just kind of slithers around, and it's experimental, but there's a lot of like classic themes that everybody can relate to, and I think that's if I'm not wrong here, is that pretty much the heart of your flash fiction work? Is that pretty much what you're trying to do?
It is sort of a abstract piece, One of the things that I felt that I discovered early on with flash fiction is if something is too abstract, sort of too out there, I don't know if I feel like it's grounded enough for me. I'm also an editor at two different journals, and I get a lot of kids playing, and I love this. I love the element of play, but playing with a lot of abstraction right now. And, you know, you go back to some of the classic, people that did abstractions, Charles Simic, James Tate, Lydia Davis. I mean, some of these writers were really, really crazily really great at doing abstraction. But for me, it makes sense if you ground it in some realistic aspect, something with a lot of tension, something that relates kind of that you can grab onto, because if you ground it in a sense of reality, then you can go into like, woo, it can fly somewhere.
Yeah.
So
exactly. I think that's a big clue into successful writing right there. There's like you said, there's plenty of people who can definitely can do the flying to Mars the whole time, but I think great writing is usually has those references that everybody can relate to, despite what's going on around them in the writing. So kudos to you, man. I love that piece a lot. It's really, really badass, you know.
Oh, thanks, bud. Well, and I also just have to thank Meg, because she's such a loyal supporter of my work, too. So, she encouraged me with that whole first line. I moved into a basement apartment. It's like, jot that line down for anybody who's listening. See where it takes you. See what goes into that whole thing of, like, you move down there, bam, and I don't know. Like, it's brought up all of this stuff, enough to build, like, half of a collection, at least, with the basement tapes. So side A and side B with this next project that I'm working on. Side A is the amnesia, and then side B is the basement tapes. So
on that note, first of all, back to the basement thing. Let's say, why don't we challenge the people that are listening just to play along at home if they feel like fucking around. What is the line? What is the line that you were given? What's the word count you were given?
I was given, I think it's a word count of under, I don't even know. I think it's 200 words, maybe. I can check.
Okay.
I have the computer right here. I can look at Used Furniture Review. The guidelines, I think, are there, because I think Meg spills them out at the actual site and then reveals the pieces. So let's say 200 words. That's a good cutoff.
Right.
And then the line was, I moved into a basement apartment. And, here's the one thing that I say with these prompt kind of lines. If it works for you to put it in present tense, do that. If you need to say, I move into a basement, if it moves to not have it in first person, put she or he moved into a basement apartment, Mix it up so that it works for you to be able to drop into wherever it takes you,
Yeah.
So that's the one thing
that's... If anybody wants to fuck around with that and write one of those things, send it to Robert Vaughn, post it on his wall on Facebook, or post it on Make Toits wall on Facebook, and maybe they'll have some fun with that, seeing that stuff that that you guys send at them, like little missiles. I want to talk to you about your side B. Your side B project is Amnesia. Your hate crime poetry book that you're working around with. You mentioned a few touchstones, different things that's revolving around that. And recently, you had a few poems that ran on the website Red Fez that were in tribute to the victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. That was pretty heavy. That was pretty heavy duty hate crime. I think that really fits in with your project. I wanted to commend you for that and ask you if you would read any of those poems that you have on that site.
Well, I'd be happy to, bud. And before I read the one of the two that I'm going to read, I just want to say this. One of the things about Red Fez, first of all, congratulations, because I know you've recently become involved with them as an editor. I've always had a lot of respect for the stuff that Red Fez does, and also just the pieces that they publish there, both fiction and poetry. And I want to say this to anyone who's listening, never give up. I was probably rejected there more than a half a dozen times, which is cool. I dig rejection, man. I am never going to let it get me down.
Yeah.
And It was just in December, just before this project was put forth, that my first piece was taken there. And it actually is also part of this project, but it wasn't part of the Sandy Hook postings that they did. The piece that they took of mine was called The Thief. It was based on the Sikh temple massacre that we had in Wisconsin last summer. And so it was in my backyard. And I wrote a really quick draft of that the week that it happened, and then I toyed around with it and toyed around with it, got feedback from different sites and my workshop here. And I submitted it in November, and they took it for the December issue. So I was really jazzed that, you know, I finally got into Red Fez. And then they also took these two pieces of mine for the Sandy Hook memorial. So I'm going to read a piece called Adversity.
Okay.
The children line up, two by two, outside the door, hand in hand, some in threes, some even more. The adult zippers, jackets, fastens caps, seatbelts toddlers as the embargo prepares its Christopher Street trek past Stonewall Inn. Reproaches after four steps, while the stroller pushers think, here we go again. And the children have already learned to ignore those voices of authority from the street, from the neighbor, from the babysitter. Ignore, defy, oppose, and challenge, but mostly ignore as they scream uproariously, giggling in the face of adversity.
Wow, that's something else, man.
Thanks.
So
you
got to
giggle
about
after
that
one.
Stuff, you know? Yeah, you have to, right? Or else you go crazy, won't you?
Well, here's what my whole thing with this is, and this is my hopes actually with this whole project,
uh-huh.
is that, you know, all of tragedies and all of massacres and all of killings have this very, very other light side, you know? They all have a place where we have to laugh. We have, you know, as deeply as we grieve, also shallowly we do giggle and we do guffaw, you know? And so my goal with this whole thing is I want to point to all of the darkness of humanity and what we do in these atrocities. But I also want to balance it. I'm a goofball. I love to laugh. I love to poke fun. I want to bring that in too. You know, I want to toy with stuff. You know, I want to have fun. I don't want to be like, "Oh, I've got to write a poem now about Darfur." You know, it's like I want to make it appeal to all of the senses, you know, not just gloom and doom. So,
well, that's pretty cool, man. Because usually, you know, I usually just write a poem about like spilling my beer on my computer or something. So that's good that you know you're right. You know, you're the sometimes you're the other side of the coin. Maybe you'll write about something pertinent to the world. Not that you know, me shorting out my computer doesn't affect the world, but. Everybody would like to think that, wouldn't they? So, so listen. Thanks for reading that. I appreciate you coming on and reading that and talking with us today about all your projects. I want to mention your projects again, so everybody knows. Maybe cemented in their head a little bit here. So we've been talking to Robert Vaughn, he's involved. Rob, you're involved as a fiction editor at KMWW and also Lost in Thought magazines. So kind folks out there in the ether, send your submissions to JMWW, your flash fiction to them and to Lost in Thought. Send your stuff. And also, Robert, are you still hosting your radio show, the Lake Effect show, Flash Fiction Friday? Is that going to
be extended? The Flash Fiction Friday format has changed because we were once a month for the past 2 years. But with my book coming out and with all the different things that we have going that I have going on personally, and Stephanie, my co-host, does, we're going to a quarterly. So, we'll have our first show in March. But you can get all the shows archived. I mean, if you want to learn more about Flash Fiction, not from me, it's from the stories that we read, surely.
Sure, yeah, well.
Just the call letters are WUWM, like Michael,
okay.
WUWM, and it's Lake Effect is the name of the show, and my show is called Flash Fiction Friday. 2 years worth of programs are archived at the site, and they're all there. But yes, so it'll be a quarterly show starting in March this year, and then Microtones should be out any day. So I would love, you know, any kind of support that I can get on that end to get the word out about that. It's my first chapbook. I'm really psyched, and that should be fun.
Yeah, congratulations. You know, it's it's great that that you have a chapbook coming out. If you're looking forward to doing that kind of stuff, it's awesome that you they have Microtones coming out, and I hope you have it at AWP. I'm gonna make an effort to come up to Boston. It's hard. It's hard though, because it's already fucking winter, and then going up to Boston in the winter is it's quite a challenge, man. Especially since coming from LA, you know. We'll see what happens.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, if you can make it, but if the weather is too shitty, you can take a train. And
that's what I was thinking about. I was talking to my my friend Mark Bard. Mark Brunetti. Bard used to be his pen name over at the Idiom, and I think he's hopping a train from Jersey up to Boston. So I might hop in the train with Mr. Brunetti.
That's cool. Yeah, that I think that's great, because there's so much going on. You know, I'm doing 3 readings while I'm there.
Where are
they? Wednesday night is a reading off-site. They're all off-site. First one, we'll post the locations, like, on my Facebook page as well as, I know Meg, I'm reading in all 3 with Meg, so we'll have them, like, up on Facebook. Certainly on my website. My website is called One Writer's Life. If you just Google that, it'll drop you up to my website. But the first one is called Festival of Light. It is listed in the AWP catalog. That's a long reading. It's like 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., but there's 3 different subgroups, and I'm in the middle one. I'm in the middle group, so it starts at like 7 o'clock, say like 7 to 7:30. If you're in the space around that time, I'll be there. So that's cool. That'll be fun. And then Thursday night, I'm not sure what that reading's called, but it's a similar to the same woman is running it as the woman that did Festival of Light, but it's more experimental stuff.
Okay.
And I'll have more info about that. Friday is a reading called Heat, and I think if you come, Bud, you're going to be reading in that. I have a feeling. I can't say for sure, but I think
I got invited. I got invited to come up and read. I got to see. I got to see what the fuck's going on with getting up to Boston. I joked around about the weather, but you know, it's just it's coming back from LA, doing the Unokudo thing out there. You know, it's missing all this time at work, but the place where I make my money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah.
So
no, I know how it is. I know how that goes.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, it was great having you on the show. I'd like you to come back one of these times and read some more stuff and tell us about another 1,000 of your projects, because now everybody hopefully is getting as busy as you, man. Congratulations with all your pursuits this year, all your stuff coming out, and good luck with Microtones, and good luck with the completion of Amnesia and Basement Tapes, okay?
Oh, Bud, you're the best, man. I really appreciate you having me on, and I really hope we get to have a beer together, you know, up in Boston. I think that would be really fun. So we'll be in touch. We always chat online, but, you know, in any case, I loved being on the show. Thanks so much for having me, and enjoy the rest of the program.
Cool, man. Right on. We'll keep in touch, all right? I'll catch you later, Rob. I'm going to take
all right,
another caller
man.
Here.
All right.
All
take
right.
care,
so,
man.
Let's get on, dude. All right. So next on the show is I'm looking at the switchboard here, and I see he's online waiting. I'm going to pull Matt Grucky on the air. I'm going to introduce him, which I should have done for Mr. Robert Vaughn there. Matt Garucki is the editor-in-chief of the literary webzine Drunk Monkeys. It's a great little site. I say little, but it's doing some really cool, you know, different things with featuring literary writing, featuring articles, reviews of TV, movies, music, just some different kind of things than your average literary magazine fare. I really dig it. But Matt's short stories, they've appeared in Connotation Press, Speaking, and Make Toit. That's her gig over there. His writing has also appeared in 5-to-1 Magazine and the upcoming editions of The Weekenders and Barnaby Snopes. Barnaby Snopes, which is Nate Towers' joint over there. Matt's pop culture writing can be found at Screen Spy, and he can be reached at on Facebook and on Twitter at Garucki, at Garucki, his last name, just at Garucki. All right, so I'm going to pull him on the show right now. Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Matt Garucki here. What's up, man?
Hey, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it. It was great to meet you last Saturday. You know, it was a good time.
Yeah, it was a pretty good time. Yeah, you came out to the Uno Kudo event at the Hindwing Gallery downtown LA. What did you think of that place? That was a fucking crazy ass place, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, I did not expect it to be anything like that. You know, I think it's going to be this kind of bohemian thing, and you walk in, and it was like a David Lynch movie or something. There's just so much shit happening on the walls and with the music, which was spectacular, and then hearing the pieces, which was so great. So, yeah, I mean, it was just like this kind of moody but ethereal sort of vibe to it, which was cool. It wasn't what I expected, but I loved it. You know, it was great.
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected either, believe it or not. it was quite a party, man, and I'm glad I got to meet your awesome wife and drink some what did we drink? Wine? I was so drunk I don't even remember what I was drinking. It was probably
I think you might have been having beer, but you know, we're the LA people, so we were doing the red wine, you know. So
Yeah, that goes, I guess, right? Yeah, right. So I want to talk to you about Drunk Monkeys. For those that don't know, I describe Drunk Monkeys in my rambling, nonsensical way. Why don't you tell me what Drunk Monkeys is to you? What's it about?
Well, really, it's the idea was in the beginning was to kind of just have practically anything, and I kind of shot that around to some friends, including Matt, who you met the other night, and she said, "Well, that's a great idea, but maybe focus." Maybe focus just a bit.
Yeah.
So now it's definitely a more literary event to it, where you know, every Tuesday and Friday we'll be doing new poems, we'll be doing new short stories, and then during the rest of the days of the week, I try to fill it up with, you know, interviews as much as we can, reviews, you know, articles, whatever, essays, just kind of on cultural, religious, whatever, just really. Honestly, anything that I see in the slush pile that really strikes my fancy for whatever reason, just because it's well-written or because it's well-reasoned or it's just an interesting topic. So I really want to kind of keep it as random but interesting as possible, you know.
Well, that's good.
So that's really it, you know, just kind of an eclectic magazine sort of feel to it.
Yeah. I think you definitely pull that off. I don't know, for some reason I have written here to ask you this question. I don't know why. I wrote it down. I wanted to know your take on this.
Sure.
How many strippers out there do you think have MFAs? Any?
What's that?
Do you think any strippers have MFAs?
I'm sure of it. I am sure of it. To be fair, I've never been in a strip club, but I've been at the bus stop with a couple strippers, and, you know, they look pretty literate. They look like they knew what was going on, so I'm going to guess they do, yeah.
All right, cool. So what's an article right now you're featuring on Drunk Monkeys that people ought to check out right now? What's the best thing you point to right now to go read?
Let's see. I would say the best thing, well, I guess now that's going into last month. Gabriel Rickard, who does pretty regular features for us, she did a piece on Sandy Hook. And I know, you know, you talked to Robert a bit about that too, but that's just kind of the vibe of the moment in the air, you know. She did a piece on that was called 1,000 Breaking Points, I think. And that was and I think we ran that on like the first or second of the year. And I was just really impressed with it. I mean, I've been working with him for now almost a year. And he always turns in great stuff, but he just really turned it up then, you know, and it's just like because he brought in some of his own experience through having, as a like a teenager, been institutionalized himself. And so he really brought a really personal perspective to it, to the mental health issue as well as the gun control issue, because it's just so complicated. And I was proud of running a site that would put that kind of thing on there. I really liked the way that went. And also, hey, I mean, look for fiction. Ad Dylan Goldschlager by Mr. Bud Smith is up there right now. So, you know, that's right there on the front page. You can check that out. And, hey, that's good.
You got a great site for people to send send your fiction, send your poetry, all that stuff. Send your articles, all your good stuff to Drunk Monkeys over there.
Please do. Yeah, and we're actually, you know, we're trying to get into, tomorrow I'll be posting our first music video. We got this girl, Jasmine Mann, who's done we published one of her poems before, but she did a cover of a Beatles song, which is really lovely. I mean, she's got a great voice. And so we're putting that together, and that's something I'd like to do too. So for anyone listening out there that, you know, has like a video of them doing a song or even a poetry reading or whatever, that's something I'd like to do more on the site because...
Okay, so
you're open to
video readings, performances. 100%. That's great.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's great. That's awesome. So send Matt that stuff too.
I was talking to Robert
a lot about LA, you know, on the radio show, and then fucking around online, killing time because I'm supposed to be editing a book. So of course I'm on Facebook talking to anybody with a green light lit up on the side over there.
Yeah.
I was talking to him about LA, and I know you've lived in LA for a while. What's your overall impression of living in LA? How do you feel about the city of Los Angeles?
You know, I mean, LA is really, to me, it's like this blank canvas. I mean, I think the people that hate LA aren't wrong, and the people that love LA aren't wrong. It's just, you know, you bring your own attitude to it, I guess. I mean, are people superficial? Yeah, of course. Are people amazing? Yeah, sure. You know, it's one of those things. You go to any city, and, you know, because I lived in San Francisco for a while, which is just an amazing city. But, you know, you have dicks in San Francisco, too. You know, I think in L.A., there does seem to be a layer of artifice in what gets out there. And, you know, you're talking about Hollywood or Beverly Hills. Yeah, that's all real, and that's obnoxious as hell. But you can stay away from those neighborhoods, too. You know what I mean? It's like any other place, you know. And, you know, I've lived in L.A. I was born in L.A. And I lived in Missouri for about 10 years growing up. So I've been kind of back and forth between here and the Midwest. I've been back in L.A. for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay. On a day-to-day, it's fine. You know, but would I rather live in a more exciting kind of city without like an actual downtown and an actual vibe? Yeah, maybe, you know, and maybe someday. You know, my wife's from Canada, and we visit Toronto a lot, and that's a hell of a city. I mean, Toronto's
a Toronto's
city.
Cool.
Yeah.
Toronto's cool.
So, you know, maybe we'll end up there someday. But for now, it's totally okay to be in L.A. But if you hate it out there, I get it.
I don't hate it at all out there. I love hanging out in LA and California. The you know, it's like that whole the whole 1990s bad stand up comedian thing though with the traffic, you know. The traffic is fucked up, you know, it starts.
Yeah, and it gets worse every fucking
year.
I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah. Which you know, it's like that episode of I don't know if you've seen the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where Larry David picks up the prostitute so we can take the commuter lane. You definitely, like, you know, I'm sitting in traffic the other day just thinking, I wish there was, you know, some prostitute I could, you know, get in the car so I can use the HOV lane. Alas.
Yeah.
So Matt, you work at home you're working out of your house now as a freelance writer, which is,
as at the first,
you know,
year.
It's like, I'm not saying that's like the dream, that's everyone's dream, but now I sure know a lot of people who wouldn't mind that.
I
know writing, girls I know writing. What do you think about it, and what's something you didn't expect that came out of it? Like, is there a downside to it? What's going on with writing from home for yourself?
Well, I mean, keeping in mind that it's only been a month, I think the only downside is my own kind of internal pressure, you know,
yeah.
to produce, to have, okay, this is, I want to try to hit this basic word count during the day across different projects if I have to, but I want to kind of get there. And but the surprising thing is I've usually gotten there and passed it. And I don't, you know, want to jinx myself and burn out, but I've done really well on staying active and
yes.
just keeping writing. And the nice thing is then that triggers, that brings the next idea, you know, is like once you're finished, you'll be kind of halfway done with something and you've got it,
uh-huh.
put that aside,
yeah.
then you get to come back to it after you're done. And that's been fantastic. So far, you know, again, knock wood, but it's pretty close to everything I could have hoped it would have been. When we, you know, made this decision, which was a big decision, obviously.
Well, that's cool. Just be like you said, you got to just keep the ball rolling. Now you kind of work for yourself. You definitely work for yourself more, and it's keeping yourself motivated. But on top of all of this, you're also pumping out a lot of short stories. They're popping up different spots. Tell me about what's coming out. I heard you have a few that are coming out soon.
Yeah, The Weekenders, I believe, comes out next week. I think it's like 14th or something.
Yeah.
Whenever Ryan gets it out, yeah.
Yeah, Ryan Swofford, yeah, he runs, he does The Weekenders, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a guy that I've worked with on Drunk Monkeys for a while, and he's just great. I mean, what's he, like 19 years old, and he's so proficient at what he does. He's, like, amazing.
Yeah.
But
when I was 19, I was... I was just falling down the stairs and just laying there until I turned 20.
Yeah, I was flunking out of college when I was 19. You know, I was not running an amazing literary mag. So, you know, big ups to Ryan. But, I got a story that will be in there, and it's called The Lonely Funeral of Arturo Gomez.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a guy that goes to a funeral of someone he just, you know, he worked with 20 years ago, barely knows, and then he's asked to speak. And just kind of, you know, anything that would come out of that instance. And then in Barbara Snopes, I'm working right now with the editors on a story that I think is coming out in May. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Well,
and
that's
actually
been,
you know,
really, yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, you know, it's good with, you know, just submitting, you know, just submit a ton of shit, right? Is that your deal? You send a lot of stuff out?
Yeah, absolutely. Usually there's like the last couple of days of the week, I try to just kind of count through as many stories as possible in, you know, the first couple of days and then like have a day to just submit. Just
submit,
search the markets. Yeah, just do whatever possible. You know, it leads to a lot of rejections, but that's how you learn. You know, and I'm a rookie at this, but it's going pretty well so far.
Well, that's pretty cool. I wanted to mention something about submitting. I talked to a lot of people who either they write a lot or they want to write more, or they're kind of like stuck in a cubbyhole of where they send stuff. Like they don't really branch out from where they send because they either know they can get accepted there or they're just not sure where else to send stuff. And I wanted to touch on something that anybody can do. All you got to do is any short story collection that you admire, you can pick them up and you can open them up. And most of the time, the stories are included in the collection. There'll be notations of places that the stories have been published previously, and you can look at those. The magazines, the sites, or whatever, and that's definitely a path for you and a different idea of a lot of different places to send stuff. So everybody, keep that in mind. And what do you think? What's your process, Matt?
It's funny actually. I mean, as an editor, because I have things coming in with bios,
uh-huh.
you know,
yes.
so they'll say, okay. This. Tell me. Oh wait, go bookmark that. Check that.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So everybody who doesn't know where to send your shit, make your own literary magazine and start fucking editing.
That's right. But the cool thing is I submitted to Anderbo, and I got a rejection. But in their rejection, they listed like five other markets that you can send to, or five other lists of markets. And I thought that was really cool. And that actually might be something that I end up putting on our site too, because that's a cool thing for like emerging writers to know, for people who are just starting out, to say, here's a
yeah, it is. It is. Especially, you know, with I was never too big into Duotrobe. Actually, I don't think I've ever visited Duotrobe. So shame on me, because it was a great resource that I think it's a subscription now. It used to be free. But
now
you could find a lot of different markets there, you know.
Yeah, Duotrobe, our submissions are starting to pick up now, but like at the first of the year when that $50 mark hit, they tanked.
Yeah.
They absolutely tanked, and it's tied to Duotrobe because we were big on with them. So, you know, so now I'm searching for new places to list the site, but that was a big hit for us actually, because it was a great resource and still is, and maybe someday I'll shell out $50 for the. Thing. I mean, Daytower's got this whole really interesting series about talking to the people who run the site and why and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I totally get it because
you
want to make money, you know. But
Of course.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of avenues for people to find out about places to send that didn't used to be so readily available. So maybe it's becoming more of a moot point, right?
So,
listen, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Appreciate you coming on and talking about all your projects going on. Telling us about what Junk Monkeys is all about, and hope you'll come back on the show another time and read something when there's a little more time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for everything. Yeah, you've been a big help, and just a cool guy. So thanks for hanging out and being awesome.
Cool, Matt. Well, I'll talk to you soon, man. Take it easy. All right.
Yeah. Have a good rest of your show. Later.
All right, later on, man. All right, well, that was great. I'm glad we got to talk to Matt. Really cool guy. Actually, believe it or not, he's the only Matt I know, which you would think I would know more Matthews. I went to grade school with a few Matthews, but who knows where they're at now. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Aaron Dietz. He's a very good friend of mine. I've known Aaron for a very long time. Since probably 2004, I've known him online, and I've got to meet him over the course of the last few years in person, and he's just a really stand-up guy, a really, really, really wonderful author, and just a thoughtful human. So I want to plug a couple things that Aaron's doing, and I also wanted to read Aaron's superb poem, There Are Choices, in a little bit. I want to tell you about Aaron's novel. If you don't know about it, he wrote a novel. It's available from Emergency Press, and it's called Super. What the book is about, it's such an interesting concept. It's a book about superheroes. Basically, through the book, you're applying for a job at a superhero agency, and the book is told through a series of pieces of paperwork that are being passed across the desk, let's say. It's really interesting. Book is available from, like I said, the wonderful Emergency Press, and you can get it on Amazon, and you can get it through Emergency Press's website. But another thing I want to touch on that Mr. Dietz is doing, it ties into his book Super. He's doing an anthology. And I want to read you his call for submissions here so you can get a feel for it. I think it's such a cool project. So Aaron's putting together a superhero-related anthology for charity. The anthology will feature online posts from real-life superheroes. So there's actually people who real-life superheroes dress up in costumes and go out and fight crime. They're out there. They're real people. And they have blogs, so Aaron's going to include some of them in his anthology. But also, and this will pertain for those of you out there who don't do that with your evenings, Aaron is going to feature fiction and nonfiction from new and established authors. And the book will be an exciting way to examine the fiction of superheroes becoming reality by blending the real-life experiences with the fiction and nonfiction works from authors like you and me who are not real-life superheroes. So he wants you want regular writers to please submit your finest superhero-related fiction, nonfiction, up to 1,500 words, but shorter is sweet, and send your submissions in a Word doc or other text-based document to writer@aaronbeats.us. I'm gonna make a Facebook page for the Unknown Show, and I'm gonna start putting up some of this info because I'm giving you a whole lot of this show is becoming an info dump, and you're probably all falling over and going to sleep in the middle of all this info I'm berating you with. So maybe I'll start posting it on a Facebook feed so you can refer to it at your leisure if you're so inclined to research out any of this stuff. But please send Aaron your submissions if this seems interesting to you. Once again, his website is his email for the anthology, writer@aarondeets, one word, aarondeets.us. And on that note, talking about Aaron and the reading, he participated in the LA reading for Uno Kudo, which also a very similar project, raising money for charity. The charity for Uno Kudo was Pan International. It's a charity that fights for the rights of oppressed artists and helps them with legal troubles around the world. So Aaron read this poem at the reading. He was the first reader, and it was called There Are Choices. He set it up really well, explained what it's about, and I'm going to kind of do the same thing because it's a very, it's a prose poem, but it's kind of experimental and it's a little bit, it's probably more meant to be read, as he said, more meant to be read than it is to be read out loud. So what There Are Choices is about is it's a person sitting in a park thinking about the attack on the World Trade Centers. And just the what came out of that. So it actually kind of reflects back somehow on what Robert Vaughn was talking about, the humanity following a disaster. So here's Aaron's poem, There Are Choices. There is the sound of birds and the sound of traffic and the sound of a plane. If you were a black rock the size of a fist, what would you listen to? Jazz? Reggae? If the sound of two hands clapping were recorded without the use of hands, would people pay attention during the commercials? This park is closed to the public, never mind the hours. If a tree fell here and there was no one to be killed by it, would it make a sound? Would the news report the death toll at zero? Would the number of people affected by the tree displacement be printed on a presidential memo? Would you smile? When you're under a tree, you have no idea that hundreds of gnats are circling above you. You have to shift your focus to see them. They show up on sky and in sky, but not under sky. You are under sky. This is probably not going to change. Cross your fingers. You are in the park. You are not a bug. This is the only thing you think you know. You are wrong. Yes, having six legs is complicated, but it's not as if they all move at the same time. Don't make a study of the moving, just move. There are trees that will fall on you for a dollar. You can crunch pine cones. That's a fact. Maybe. You can put your foot over them and press down and they will crunch. Only, you better try this to be sure. Try it, right now. Don't worry, we will go on without you. The stories of leaves turning orange have been confirmed. We think they will stay on the tree this time. It's a basic assumption that health is based on staying alive. But the assumption is wrong. Trying to stay alive is what makes you unhealthy. Living, however, that is something entirely different. Like cantaloupe. But there is no cantaloupe in this park. There is no plane in this park either. But you don't hear the cantaloupe. While you were away crunching pine cones, we should discuss your disappointment in yourself. It hasn't really been that long since you got laid, but it's been longer since you had a conversation. The conversation of that statement doesn't exist. Have you dropped the ball on going out, making friends, making out? Have you dropped hints that you missed because you dropped them? When you drop a rope, does it coil into a heart or does it strangle something? This leads to the question, where did you get the rope? You remember ropes, which is weird because you don't remember remembering them. But since you don't remember not remembering them, you have to go with your gut. Fortunately, your gut doesn't remember. So there are choices. There are birds and there's the traffic and there's the plane, and what you focus on is the thing that makes no sense. Does the plane overhead have any connection to the dying plant with its long stem filled with barbs of dead flowers, except the ashes spread through the air by a future collision between the plane and the skyscraper will eventually settle on the plant's drooping leaves? Is the plant connected? Do you have a connection? Are you out of service? When you look up and see the plane, do you secretly want it to be the one that is going to take you out? Secretly the one that is going to take out your local skyscraper, because at least then you will know you can feel something. Maybe the impact will ripple through you and demonstrate that you have depth. Maybe not. Maybe you are transparent. Maybe you hate plants. In any case, what you are wearing today could help you in a disaster. You'll blend right in if you're alive. As the dust settles, it's good to look up. So that's our show for today. I want to thank everybody who came on. And I hope that you'll tune in next time. We'll have more interviews and more readings, more discussions. And that's all for tonight. Thank you.